Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I've seen enough. I've heard enough. I've got the expert explosive enforcement opinion. Real device, real powder. They did a test burn. Would have functioned. I got everything I need to know. And the husband has already told me, I found one of these on the bottom of my truck a week ago. I just threw it in the back of the truck. I didn't know what it was. Okay, where's that? Gone.
Jeez. Yeah. Gone where?
Who knows? Driving around for a week, bounced out, fell out. Wife could have done something. Because she had tried to do this a week before. And she's like, huh, no loud noises. Wonder what went wrong with that. Yeah. I better make another one. So she does. She puts it on the bottom of his truck, wires it to the bottom of his truck, puts this long maroon drawstring from the thing that she's wearing, like a 3-foot fuse, if you will. It's 4:30 in the morning. She lights it as he's getting ready to go out to his truck.
Hey guys, welcome back to this week's part 3 with Eric Emsberger, who is a retired ATF agent. He's telling us some great stories over the past couple of days, and we're in the middle of this, what started out to be a murder for hire that continues to grow and grow. It's like this thing doesn't have an end. We left you on a cliffhanger yesterday where they've identified this guy who was pulling the bank robbers, killed himself once he was trapped. When they're doing a search warrant on his parents' house at the Lake of the Ozarks, they find a shoebox full of photographs. And so now we're pursuing through these photographs where they've identified a lady who Eric has described as genetically perfect. And as I said yesterday, I'd never heard that term before, but she must be an 11.
She was well put together, and she had just graduated to a substantial cocaine habit. Oh. So that was going on with her. I don't want to say her name, Steve, because she did have a daughter with bank robbery guy. I am almost certain. She definitely had a daughter. And our Miss, a cautionary tale to the masses, Miss Genetically Perfect, who could have married like anybody. She could have had a set up life, even with a kid, dead boyfriend, and still got a kid. But she chose, cocaine, like we would drink coffee in the morning. And she wound up dying of a overdose. So I feel sympathy for the child that she had to grow up, not really knowing mom too well, probably, or maybe a little bit, but not knowing the backstory. So I make an assumption that kid may, he could be talking about anybody, maybe not my mom.
Yeah, so, that's fine.
Little of that protect the innocent, as Adam 12 would say. So I do feel sympathy for that kid who right now is a grown adult. I hope to God she's still alive, and has done something positive with her life. You hope.
Right.
So we identify the girl in the photograph that's have sex acts with both our dead bank robber now and Miss Genetic Perfect. I'll just call her that because she was a good looking girl.
Oh, so, we need to get you a cup of cold water or anything here?
Yeah, good. I'm immune.
Okay, I got you.
So we knock on this girl's door, same building, the woman I was hired to kill. So it's Wes and myself. And she answers. She's home. And we go, hey, I want to talk to you about Wayne Williams. He's already dead. She goes, well, you know, why, what? And then we're like, hey, you know, it's almost like you sing the song. We know something you don't know, and we have something that you wish we didn't. And she was a little, very hesitant to speak. And then exhibit A, is that you with no clothes on with Miss Genetic and Mr. Williams? Okay. I'm like, now you can be with them or you can be with us. What do you want to do? And there was zero indication she had anything to do with these bank robberies in any aspect. So it was easy to get her cooperation. I have to jump through a bunch of hoops because what was the target? The girlfriend who we fully believed in some manner was involved with, like, Wayne Williams was doing these bank robberies by himself inside the bank. But was she outside looking out, a getaway driver? By the way, where's all the money from all of these robberies? So Miss Limo Girl decides to cooperate. And of course, in my world and Wes's world, nothing can ever be fast enough. And we're like, okay, we're going to tonight. You're not going to have much time to think about how your life just took a left-hand turn.
Yeah.
My tech guy come in. We're going to install hidden video and audio in your apartment. And you're going to call Miss Genetic over for dinner. And we know you've already had sex with her at least the times in these pitches. Okay, I can do that. And we want you to talk about, you know, a dearly departed bank robber, and the golden ring is her involvement in the bank robberies. Where's the money? What did you do with the money? All of that. She goes, oh, I can do that. Good. That night, she calls her friend over who, we're watching this. God. She comes in a little mini skirt, you know, like I'm ready to go to the club, high heels. She comes in. This is the first words out of her mouth. Oh, hi. I just got diagnosed with genital herpes.
Oh no.
That's the gift that keeps on giving. Got thrown on the table like a bowling ball. But Miss Genetic can't stop there. She goes, and later in the conversation, she goes, and I have two attorneys, you know, because of all this bank robbery stuff, and I've already been interviewed and blah, blah, blah. I got two attorneys, and I haven't been paying them. I've been banging them. And the older attorney has employed his daughter's husband, his son-in-law, an attorney, the two of them. So these are the two, son-in-law and father-in-law, who individually have no knowledge, according to her, that she's drilling both of these guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You can't make this up.
You can't make this up. So now I need, and this is what she admits to on tape. She goes, oh, yeah, some of the DIPAC money. I found a way to get DIPAC red out of these bills. You simply wash a machine with acetone. How she didn't blow the apartment up.
Isn't that the truth?
But she goes, that works. Acetone. I'm like, little note to self. Let the FBI know that. I'm sure they probably already do, but little nugget of useful information.
Right.
So she admits to all of this. federally, she's not going to get charged. She's got a little kid. She was not at the bank robberies, but she surely liked spending the money and doing coke and all the rest of it. Good. So now we go to our sex in the limo cooperator. Do you think that you could introduce me to her and I could then go to work and really go into this whole bank robbery thing? Like, you did a great job, but I'm not convinced that she wasn't about. She really wasn't, other than enjoying the proceeds. As it's been said, money feels good in your hand. You know, it just feels good. Yeah. So she introduces me at a club late at night. She's going to be here. She's going to be with other people. I go in, I get into Nikki from Brooklyn. I get introduced to her. Miss Genetic is so smoked out on coke that like a canine would have alerted on her breath. I get introduced and there's some general conversation, but she is so under the influence. It's almost a meaningless thing. So end the contact. Good. I got introduced. I said, let's figure out another way that we're going to go at this. Good. So Wes is like, look, she's dead in the water. Let's just arrest her. But we would like to interview her. Now, that whole Sixth Amendment attachment of, you know, have you really retained an attorney? You haven't been accused of anything. You're not in custody. You're not being questioned in custody. So even if you've spoken to an attorney, you know, I saw one on TV. Who knows? In my mind,
right?
I can interview you. Good. So I said, we have to make a psychological impact on the arrest to completely put her not at ease, open to, oh my God, what is this about? She was like the maitre d' of a kind of high-end lunch spot where a lot of suit and tie business guys would go, client me, all that kind of stuff. It's a lunch spot, but you know, we probably wouldn't go there, you know, right, for the $20 cheeseburger.
Yeah.
But she's running the show and it's packed every day. Not so much for the cheeseburgers because they're looking at her. It's like a runway fashion show anytime you go to lunch there. And she's got the bolt-ons. I don't know what surgeon did her surgery, but he gave his money's worth to that operation. Like, perfect. So we knew that. So in Kansas City, you make an arrest as a uniformed cop. You don't transport your own prisoner. You call a prisoner van. Not only do they transport, they do all the processing for you.
Wow, nice.
Kansas City has got a lock on best practices. They really do. So, and it's a windowless van. So we have the van in the parking lot of this joint ready to go. I grab two uniform guys. Wes gets them off the road and I give them the 5-minute brief. I'm like, look, here's the story in a nutshell. The girl's inside. This is what you're going to do. You're going to arrest her, but you're going to walk in full uniform. And I did this at the height of lunch hour because I wanted to make a spectacle in her mind. They walk in and I go, say nothing. You say her name. Are you so-and-so? Yes, you're under arrest. And then say nothing else. Nothing. Rear handcuff her. She's not going to put up a fight, but she's going to be an emotional wreck. Say nothing. Walk her out. And they do that. Like, you could hear the fork drop on every plate. Like, oh.
Did you just see that?
What could this possibly be about? So now I know I'm at the back of the van. The doors are open. And I said, get her pocketbook. She's not going to have it on her, but make sure you leave with her pocketbook. Very important. Do not leave without that. They get that. They bring it out. I got the ATF shield around my neck. My buddy Wes, Kansas City robbery. And this is what I say to her. I say her first name. I'm like, hey, here's who I am. Introduce myself. And I have her purse now. And I had gone through it real quick. I got to make my own luck here. I need something to hit her between the eyes with. Well, I see this little scrap of paper, and this is what it handwritten. Swedish Massage Institute. 5 lessons, so much, and a phone number. I'm like, yes, perfect. So now she's at the back of the van. I already know this little nugget of information. And I'm like, hey, guess what? Here's who I am. You're under arrest. I didn't tell her federally, state, you're under arrest. And I said, I've been authorized by the United States Attorney's Office to conduct electronic surveillance on you, which is a true statement. We're the only agency that still mandates you need an AUSA to give you verbal permission to conduct electronic surveillance. It's like, we don't need that lawfully, but you know, it's like, well, it's the way we've always done it. And it's like a checkbox. You have to check that off.
Oh, yeah.
So we still do it. The AUSAs get sick of us calling. They're like, hey, just, yeah, the answer is yes. Yeah, you can call me, but of course, yeah. You know, we're not going to deny you, you know, go make your tape recording. Good. So I say to the girl, I'm like, hey, I've been authorized to conduct electronic surveillance on you. I know everything about you talking dirty. And I even know about the Swedish Massage Institute, 5 lessons, blah, blah, blah. She goes, oh my God, you know everything. Like, mission accomplished. You have completely accepted the premise that I laid out. I'm listening to your phone. I'm like, you have become the star in our little show. Yeah. And she believes it. Into the van. Back to one of the Pete, I don't know if we brought her to the ATF office. We brought her to some recorded interview room. And she starts, she agrees to be interviewed. And, you know, here's why you're here. Tampering with evidence. Bank robbery money. And I said, by the way, you know, where's this? We're interested in proceeds. Is there any money left? And I said, by the way, did Wayne buy that augmentation with bank robbery proceeds?
You're not going to take them, are you?
She looks at me indignant. And she goes, my father paid for these.
Okay, Dad.
Father of the year, right there. I see where the train has now started to go off the tracks in her life.
Oh, my goodness.
But she ultimately says, yeah, I want to call my attorney. Good. Yeah. Good for you. In my mind, you're not going to prison. Probably not even going to go to jail over this. But you're going to plead guilty to something because you're dead in the water and I got you on tape and blah, blah, blah. So typical fashion, whenever somebody would ask for an attorney, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I said, and make sure it's a good attorney because you're dead in the water. And everybody's got an interview style, but generally guys that I would want cooperation from, I would almost do a reverse proffer in the interview. I would tantalize them a little bit. And I would say, listen, I've got this. I've got you on tape doing this. I've got you on video selling us all this crack and firearms. Hey, you can go to trial, but your face is going to be on the 12-foot screen in federal court. Are you going to tell 12 people that's not me? That's a tough one.
Yeah.
So I would do that. And the ones that did call an attorney, I would similarly get the attorneys before they would go in. And I would give them the same speech. I'd be, listen, go talk to your client, but I'm looking for cooperation. I'm looking for them to give up the others in this conspiracy.
Right.
So the both of them come down. The father, the son-in-law, both of them come down. Good. I couldn't have been more perfect. And I'm going through. I'm like, hey, we got this. We got this. And by the way, I have her on tape admitting to all of this stuff, the acetone, the bank robbery, dye pack, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I can't believe it. Like one of the first words out of her mouth is she just got diagnosed with general herpes. Their faces go like Snow White.
Oh, my God.
They can't put a sentence together. They go in and talk to her. It's a very short conversation. And neither one, according to the feeling I got, was new about the other one. How do you explain that at Thanksgiving? Awesome. So
they
go in. It's a very short conversation. They're not letting her be further interviewed. And yeah, she gets charged with the, you know, minor tampering with an evidence. It wound up going, you know, to no significance. But we ran it to ground that there, you know, Wayne Williams was really the sole bad guy doing all this stuff. And then unfortunately this girl dies a few years later of coke overdose. And Steve, this is a girl just in the aesthetics department. If she would have gotten an education, she could have gone anywhere that she wanted. And there would be no shortage of quality guys that would have ice picked each other to get to her. Hey,
it's not what she chose.
La cocaina makes you do crazy things, along with meth and crack and everything else.
Yeah. And all of this started from a murder for hire.
It all started from murder for hire. So, you know, the good investigators, the good undercovers, all of them, you're always trying to be all you can be. How is there other legs to this investigation? Are there further conspirators that we can smoke out of the woodwork somehow? It's like always looking, enhance the investigation, make it, make it that it's like there's nothing more we can squeeze out of this as far as information or other crimes or other bad guys, bad girls, all that kind of stuff. Right. And this investigation was that. It was a little bit of everything that we do, but it was like anybody would have been happy. Oh, perfect that murder for hire. That was a real deal. Get the other guy that's on parole. It's like, you know, Senoritas and Margaritas. It's like, woo-woo, out at the bar that night and like, what a fantastic case. But we were like, you know, Wes and myself. Oh, by the way, after this case, I basically put a gun to Wes's head and said, fill this out. You're coming with us. And he became an ATF agent, became the group soup of Springfield, Missouri, and he's retired now.
Excellent. Excellent.
Just like Brent, like an unbelievable talent of a police officer. And I'm like, I felt my job was almost like talent acquisition for ATF. And ATF, that's in large part how we hire people. It's like a crime family. Like you almost need to be a recommended known quantity. And if you do bring somebody into the fold, we hold you responsible. Like if you brought us in a hot mess, we are going to hold that against you.
Oh yeah. You vouch for this person. Yeah. It's on you. Hey.
And by the way, don't vouch unless you know, and don't bring somebody in that's, you know, going to drill a hole in the boat. We need guys, girls that are going to row the boat. So,
Well, we've got a little more time here, and I know you got another story we talked about earlier. Let's delve over into that just a little bit.
Okay. Oh my God. Another sweet, hot mess of a story. This is not long after the whole murder for hire thing. That was September of 99. This is 3 months later, January of 2000. And again, I'm still like, be all I can be. I'm going to be proactive. Well, get a call from my boss, my GS. He's like, hey, the big one, the bell just rang. I've already got an explosive ordnance people, military and ATF in Cuba, Kansas, population like 300. There's a pipe bomb on a guy's truck and it was lit. And he pulled the fuse out. It's in his driveway. This happened like at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
Get out there. Don't have to tell me twice. Oh, and put a suit on. Didn't have to tell me that either. I'm like, yeah, this is an investigation. Good. I go out. When I get to middle of nowhere, Cuba, Kansas, at this house where this truck is, there's the one fire truck from Cuba, Kansas. There's the like one or two cops from the area. And there is the husband and wife that live in this house. It's the husband's truck. They've been married for 23 years. They got three kids. Two of them are in the Navy and they got one kid, adult, living at home. Now, I had already been on the phone with our explosive guy and he goes, oh my God, this is wild. This is a complete homemade pipe bomb. And the fusing mechanism is a maroon drawstring from like a hoodie or something like that.
This is something MacGyver made.
Yeah. You put together a device that would have functioned, but your fusing mechanism was a little not up to the mark because the victim saw it lit under his truck. And, whoa, what's this? Oh, this looks just like the pipe bomb I pulled off my truck last week. I didn't think anything of it. I just threw it in the back of my pickup truck. Oh. This is what he says. Now, when I pull up to the scene, one fire truck, the husband and wife, the newspaper reporters out there, this is like, as we would say in Brooklyn, has become a to-do. The wife is wearing a maroon sweatshirt with no drawstring. So the first thing I do, I introduce myself. And this is what I say to these. The husband is like, it's like I'm the life raft that he is grabbing onto now because it's like, oh, ATF, the feds are out here. This is great. We're going to find out who was trying to kill me. Yeah, the person trying to kill you standing right next to you. So I introduce myself and I say, seriously, I am going to determine what happened. I'm going to determine who did this. I promise you that. In my mind, I've already solved this. But I'd like a little exhibit one, maybe exhibit two. The bomb is exhibit one. Exhibit two. I tell one of the firemen, hey, I'm from Brooklyn. It's like, I've never even seen a cornfield. I'm trying to make myself like, show me around. Because in the heartland, call it that for a reason. You've never seen, look over there. Look, yeah, good. So I give my camera to the fireman. I'm like, oh my God, take a picture with me next to the husband and wife. We're like best friends now. I want mother of the year, wife of the year with this sweatshirt missing the drawstring. Good. I hook up with the explosive enforcement officer who I knew from the academy. He'd been like one of our instructors down there. Good dude, former military guy. Mostly our non-agent explosive enforcement officers, typically military experience. And his name was Johnny. And this dude, you couldn't slap a smile off this guy's face. This guy smiled. It was like welding on his face. Yeah, Johnny. Nicest dude in the world. Famous. Remember the five Dallas police officers shot and killed by a sniper?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the way that ended was a police robot was driven up to the shooter, poof, and functioned the explosive that was put on the robot to end that situation. Johnny's the guy that put that explosive together on scene. And that was that. Not even a well-known fact to regular ATF, but yeah, he did that. So, and that occurred of obviously way after this thing in Cuba, Kansas. So I go to Johnny and he explains, okay, I've already looked at this. The military ordnance people have been out here. They've looked at it. This is a real device. This would have functioned if the fusing mechanism had actually reached the charge. Good. And it's wired like baling wire attached to the bottom of his truck. And they're both... The wife is even more excited now. She's like, I want to know who would have done something like this. My husband, somebody tried to kill my husband. And she works for the local newspaper in some fashion. So she's like, we're going to do a story on, you know, okay, good. I'll be with you in a little bit. I need to see a little bit more of what's going on over here. So sure enough, I'm looking at the device. Yep, it's good to go. It's filled with what Johnny tells me, I believe this is flash powder, super unstable, highly, it's, you get enough of it together, you're going to do some damage.
Wow.
Very unstable. It's shock sensitive, heat sensitive, like every kid with a hammer and a roll of caps, you know, on the sidewalk, that's right. Flash powder, a micro amount of flash powder. Well, flash powder is also in firecrackers, the M100s, you know, all those blockbuster things that everybody wants to put together in their living room.
Right.
On July 1st. Good. So now we're looking around the outside and I go to the back of the house and there's a like back door and what's on the ground? Hundreds of firecrackers opened.
I'm not kidding. Wow.
I'm like, okay.
She didn't have a future in being a career criminal, did she?
No. And now the husband is 110% supportive of his wife, enraged that somebody would try to do this. So we ask just a few general questions like, you know, there's no problems between you guys. No. In, I guess, the mom's mind, she realizes, ruh-roh, they're asking questions of me. She calls her adult son, who's in town working. That hothead comes racing back, driving over the lawn, like power skidding up to the picnic table that I'm sitting on with mom. And he gets out, like, we didn't have tasers back then, but he would have been a candidate. And he comes running up to me. He's like, are you saying that my mom tried to kill my dad? Or blah, blah, blah. I'm like, whoa, nobody's saying that. Well, where'd you've gotten that idea?
Yeah.
Well, my mom called me. That's where I got the idea. And she's upset. And I'm like, relax. You're very upset in front of your mom, your dad. They've been through a traumatic experience. Calm. It calms down. Good. I've seen enough. I've heard enough. I've got the expert explosive enforcement opinion, real device, real powder. They did a test burn, would have functioned. I got everything I need to know. And the husband has already told me, I found one of these on the bottom of my truck a week ago. I just threw it in the back of the truck. I didn't know what it was. Okay, where's that? Gone.
Jeez. Yeah. Gone where?
Who knows? Driving around for a week, bounced out, fell out. The wife could have done something. Because she had tried to do this a week before. And she's like, huh. No loud noises. Wonder what went wrong with that. Yeah. I better make another one. So she does. She puts it on the bottom of his truck, wires it to the bottom of his truck, puts this long maroon drawstring from the thing that she's wearing, like a 3-foot fuse, if you will, It's 4:30 in the morning. She lights it as he's getting ready to go out to his truck. Like she's with the coffee. Okay, hon, have a good day at work. And he's like, what's that sparkler looking sight that I see under my truck? He looks under. He's like, oh, just like the one last week, except this one's lit. So he pulls the drawstring fuse out. And, you know, then the phone calls start to everybody. And now I'm out there. So I get the wife inside. I have a Kansas Bureau Investigation agent with me. Good dude. And we're going to interview her. And she is eager to be interviewed. So we do this inside the house. Tape recorder right on the table. No concealed anything. And go through the whole thing. And she gives it up quickly.
She confesses?
Confesses. And now, you know, you confess to doing it. How did you put this together? I used wire from over there. I used those metal cutter things. I guess some other wire in the shed. We go out there. We get that. Tool mark examination. That tool made those marks on that wire. So later, we found out from the lab. Excellent. Our lab is, those guys, I wouldn't want to do anything wrong. Those guys are going to crack the code. Good. Those tool mark examiners. And so she lays the whole thing out. And she used salad dressing screw-on tops as the end of this cardboard-like cylinder with duct tape and all the rest of it. Look in the garbage can. And there's the salad dressing things, no top. There's the wire. Oh, they had duct tape. Oh, yeah, I used that duct tape right over there. Oh, good. Fantastic. So now I'm like, all right, she gave this up pretty eagerly. And she says, yeah, I took the fire crackers apart and used that, put them in this thing. Okay, good. Why did you do this? You having problems with your husband? No. Okay, why? She goes, and all these admissions, she does not want to admit to, I was trying to kill my husband for money. But she finally comes out with enough. I said, do you have life insurance? No. All right. If your husband died, what were you going to get money for? Like, how much do you have in your bank account? How much do you have in your purse? How much money do you have in the house? And she goes, well, I could sell the house. I could sell his boats. I could sell this. I could sell that. And I'd get money. For what? And she said, I'm one of nine kids. I'm number eight. My sister, number nine. Her son is in jail. And I want to bail him out. Because there's all these corrupt cops and he, and I'm like, corrupt cops. There's like three cops in the surrounding 100 miles. And I'm like, what is he in jail for? Ah, well, he's in jail on a drug charge, county jail, but he escaped. And where's the best place to go when you escape? Oh, let's go back to my house. That might be the first place the cops go to look for you.
Yeah, another rocket scientist.
Which they did. He's inside the house. He sees the chief of police car and the chief of police. And he goes, well, it's just one guy. Let me go take a shower. And he's got three firearms with him. He goes, let me go take a shower. He takes a shower while all this is going on. They're applying for a search warrant because somebody said he is in the house. Okay. You know what? It could have went a lot of ways, but they said, we're going to do it high diddle diddle right up the middle. They get a search warrant for the body. And he comes out of the shower and now not only are there more police, but there's state troopers surrounding the house. So my little jump out the window plan with my three guns, that's not going to work. So he does the next best thing. He goes up to the attic and he's got his guns laid out in front of him, and they execute the search warrant. And a uniformed officer had a police canine, and they put the canine up in the attic. And according to this guy, like, the dog didn't see him, and it's just there, like, laying down by the opening. And the officer, the canine handler, goes through the opening. And as soon as he puts his head through it, this guy starts shooting, shoots the cop in the head, dead.
Oh.
Kills the canine, dead. And the chief, I think the police chief, like, caught his guy coming out of the attic stairs. And, okay, ex-fill out of the house. And he goes, just start putting gas up in the attic, which they do. And, you know, stupid surrenders. And
what an idiot.
That's what the nephew of our pipe bomber wanted, to get him out of jail. To which I, yeah, he doesn't have a bail package. He shot and killed a police officer. No bail condition. How much, you know, he had a, I think he had a small bail amount from the drug charge. She might have been able to do that, but, you know, guy just killed a cop.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
And she's willing to kill her husband to get her cop murdering nephew out of jail.
Yeah. Finally, the circuitous questioning and answers goes to, I'm like, well, what do you think would have happened if this went off under the seat? You know, where your husband is. It's, well, yeah, you know, she's dancing around. Yeah, might have been killed. So now, and she won't admit intent to kill her husband. But she says, hey, I am, well, if he did die, then I would be able to sell this, and get money and get my nephew out of jail. Like,
that's without making a full confession, the intent is implied.
Yeah. Wow. So towards the end of this interview, the phone starts ringing in the kitchen. Phone starts ringing. And I'm like, hey, you can answer the phone. It's an attorney that the husband said, hey, they're questioning my wife, who did nothing. And, oh, you're the attorney? Okay. The time is, this recording is being deactivated because I'm done questioning your client. Like, literally, I was done, phone call or not. We were over. Good. So she is going to come out of the house now in handcuffs. The husband is all antsy, angry, because we have informed her that, hey, your wife put that on your truck. Your wife wanted to harm you to get money, sell all your assets to get money to bail out this nephew. Because I say, well, if you went to your husband and get, would he agree to give you money to bail? Yeah, probably not. No. Okay. Doesn't even like my sister. Perfect. Perfect. They need a wing in the county jail just to hold people from this family. So the husband is now enraged. He's not like kicking and screaming enraged, but he's vexed that we're telling him your wife is the one that did this. And here's why. She would never do that. I don't believe you. Well, whether you believe me or not makes a zero difference in my day. I want to say goodbye to her. I'm like, I'll arrange that. The opportunity for more conversation. Perfect. So I put two cars, ATF cars, bumper to bumper. I tell the husband, you are on one side. I'm going to let you speak to your wife. There's no contact. Wife comes out. This is what he says. Don't worry, honey. I know you didn't do this. I know you're innocent. Everybody knows you're innocent. I'm with you. I just want you home. Like, Okay.
Wow.
This is what the wife says. Deadpan delivery. She goes, Gary was his name. Gary, didn't you hear what they told you? I tried to kill you, something to that effect. I couldn't pull out a pad of paper fast enough to write that down so I could say, yeah, I wrote it down like 2 seconds after she said it. And that was the end of that conversation. We took her away. I was like, good God.
Did he ever realize?
He had to. So she's arrested for attempted murder. So in that county, there's the district attorney, the prosecutor, and I think there was one other person in the office and a secretary. That was the prosecutor's office. So I met with him and I said, listen, we'll do, you don't have to spend a dime. We will do everything that involves any expensive money in this investigation. We will bring you everything perfectly wrapped up and then you do your thing. We're not going to charge her federally. And he couldn't have been happier. I'm like, all you have to do really is stand in court and do your thing. We're giving you everything. So of course, her lawyer wants a preliminary hearing. Like she wants a preliminary hearing where I'm going to give testimony along with Johnny. And she believes she's going to destroy probable cause. And the judge is going to dismiss everything out of hand. Because it's not often I get to defend an innocent client. Okay, good. So Johnny and I go and we're going to testify and we are superbly prepared for this court appearance. The entire county turned out like there wasn't room in this courtroom for a stroller filled. Yeah. And we basically lay out everything, the entire investigation, the interview, the statements, the device, the lab determination, everything. And the defense did not get the expected outcome. I think the judge was horrified. And
I would think everybody was.
This prosecutor writes a letter right up to headquarters. He's like, I just want to commend Johnny and Eric, the testimony. I've never seen a better prepared investigation.
Excellent.
In my career. And of course, I think she bit off 5 years on a plea, but
that's
Cuba,
all?
Kansas. Oh, we tried to find the other device and she had said, I threw some other stuff out in the garbage. We traced this like the funny cop stuff. We trace the garbage route, the company, the dumpster. Did you empty it today? Yes. Where did it go? Where did it go? Where did it go? Went to a massive garbage collection point where it would then be taken on 18 wheelers out to a landfill. The truck was packed still. And we knew she described that I put it in this kind of bag. So we put on the spaceman suits and all night, I mean all night, they dumped the tractor trailer and we went through everything. It was the height of pheasant hunting season. There had to be thousands of pheasant carcasses. The only thing that could have made it worse is if it was July or August. It was January. Thank God it was cold. But it stunk. And we went through an 18-wheeler of garbage, like 10 of us. Found nothing. But, you know, it would have been icing on the cake. Not necessary.
Right, right. But, well, so, a safety concern as well.
There you go.
Wow. You know, we have a section. This would have been a great story for small town police blotters, but I've got a Patreon section every month that's you can't make this crap up.
Yeah. Thank God they're stupid. We'd never catch anybody.
Oh, my gosh. Well, and these are great stories. We could sit there for hours and hours, but you pulled the pin from ATF in 2019. Is that right?
I did. January of 2019, my oldest son, who's still in the military, he was getting set to go to basic 2 months after I retired. And you know, 57,
Mandatory retirement.
They feel, when I heard this early in life, mandatory retirement 57, because we feel you're not physically capable of doing this. And I'm like, that's crazy talk. Not when I got in my 50s, it wasn't crazy talk. I like, they're onto something there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my son getting ready to go into the Navy. And I said, I'm spending the last 60 days that I'm really going to get a chance to see him, spend time with him, working out every single day. Not that he needed it at that point, because he was like a human cyborg. But it was like the last 60 days where I'm going to see you every day. You're going to go on and do great things, but I'm not going to be able to see you every day. So
nice. Very nice.
And that's literally why I left.
Yeah. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, you call that priorities. I mean, you chose the right priority there. Not that you didn't love what you were doing, but nothing beats family. And how many times, you're just like me and every other dedicated law enforcement professional, how many times do we put the job before the family?
Constantly. Yeah. And I consciously was that guy. I'm like, I was never, ever, ever home. I got into a shooting at a hotel at like 11:45 at night. I'm firing rounds. The guy next to me, a third person firing rounds, had actually hit the guy. Well, before that, way before that, my first and my second or third grade son, who's now almost 17, and the kids are like, hey, Dad, when are you gonna be home? When are you gonna be home? When are you gonna be home? I'm like, after a while, I'm like, the front door. When I come through the front door, that's when I'm gonna be home. It might be tonight and it might be in a month. And that happened several times. So he comes to me when we're out here in Missouri now, and he says, hey, there's a class trip to the zoo. It's a once a year trip they do. And they want parents as chaperones. Dad, please, please, could you come to the zoo? Come to the zoo. And I'm like, I don't care what's going on.
Going to the zoo.
I'll be there with you. I don't care what's going. Well, what was going on is like that shooting, like the night before this zoo trip. I walk in the door at like dawn from the shooting scene and investigation. My son is bounding down the stairs and he's like, Dad.
You're already dressed.
You're already dressed. You're ready to go. He's like, we're going to go to the zoo. And I'm like, right, we're going to the zoo today, kid. So yeah. I made a point to take a selfie with him at the zoo. I'm like, sometime down the road, I'm going to take, you're going to see this picture and I'm going to explain to you what just happened like the night before. But yeah, we went to the zoo.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that, love it, man. So in retirement, what are you doing now? I mean, as busy as you were, you can't just sit down.
No, I had always had woodworking in the blood. And I said, I'm gonna start a furniture building company, send it woodworking, little play on words, rifle, scope, saw blade, logo. And I, again, love it as much as ATF. And that has been going just as busy as one guy could be. And, wow. I wanted to build turn of the century stuff, but everybody is asking me for epoxy river stuff, cutting boards, charcuterie boards, whiskey flight boards, all of that. So I got a little bit of expertise in making these, and you know, because just like investigations, it's a huge curve to learn how to do that stuff, but I've got it down. And then recently, you know, I did the first podcast a few months ago, and a gal that had lived across the street, went to college, she married an NYPD guy, he retired, actually worked in the exact command for that whole DEA Learjet photo thing. And he told me, yeah, those pictures are still being used. They're still pasted all over the walls. I'm like, good. But and they were both in the movie industry, Hollywood, but they have public relations firms, social media firm, I think one or two other businesses, all dealing with corporate marketing, all of that. They heard the podcast and they reached right out. They go, we want you. We want to make you a project.
Nice.
And we'll do everything. We'll set up the social media. We will, the landing page, the everything. Like you, they called me like the next day. They go, by the way, now you own your name. I didn't even know that was a thing. I'm like, oh yeah, you own your name now. And they set up everything. And then I did another one. And Steve, so gracious of you to get in.
No.
So when I was in ATF, I mean, ATF had me going one end of the country to the other, putting on debriefs, mainly a debrief on my agent that had been shot and killed in Long Island in 2011. New Year's Eve 2011, day before my daughter had been born, and then the shooting the next day. It was just like, it was, when you think how many things can happen at the same time, like that was one of them. You know, and then again, you know, not father of the year for several months. I was very much with the family and, you know, managing this tragedy and all of that. So that was, and his son was in the first semester of college when that happened. He's now an ATF agent and he married an ATF agent. So
how about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
In the blood. But I felt like I had a flair somewhat for telling the stories. And then I've done some speaking where we tie in these crisis stories and layering the exact applicability of lessons learned and methods and the way we do business to the corporate world, sales, marketing, getting a motivated unit, having the right leader, leadership lessons, all of that stuff. So that's the focus now, is getting before corporate audiences, trainings with law enforcement organizations, all of that to, again, in my thinking, it's not work. It's, I have an opportunity to help with some of the experiences I've been through with my team. And if it's helpful, fantastic. That's literally what I want to do. And that's like the next adventure. Yeah, as my wife says, another direction. But I have the most supportive wife in the world. She backs like every play, and she is awesome. I could not like be luckier, really.
I may be married to her sister because she supports everything I do. It's unbelievable. She even edits a lot of the podcast for me now, just to free up some of my time.
That's great. And even work-wise, like she let me be all I can be. And at my retirement, you know, hoorah, going away thing, so there were 200 witnesses in the room. I said, hey, I'm retired. She was an AUSA and had been for many years, super talented in that. Mm-hmm. And she had been approached for promotion many times. And she says, hey, I just can't commit to that. We got the kids. My husband works 8 days a week. You see him in the office all the time. You know, so I can't. And I said at my retirement, I said, hey, you get to be all you can be job wise, and I will take care of everything. Dishes,
excellent.
Kids, school, nice. Dogs, everything. I got it. Like I literally told her, I got it. You have sacrificed hugely so mm-hmm. I could do what I do. And now I get to return that. And then she got promoted to the criminal chief for the district of Kansas. She got promoted up to the first assistant United States. It's, you know, the number two person in the state, the district. And yeah, so You know, like AUSA, they get on trial mode. It's like they're there, but they're not there. She had an office war room in every house we've had. And
yeah,
she was just awesome. So it was joyful to me to be able to let her just run and gun, you know, like I did.
To give back a little bit.
Yeah.
So looking up on social media, I found Eric, all the following places on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, all at Eric Emsberger, and that's spelled Immesberger. And your website is ericemsberger.com. And yep. Where can people find your woodworking business?
There you go. Send it underscore woodworking. That's my IG for the business. Best way to get a hold of me. The landing page for the speaking consulting media is my name, just one word, ericemsberger.com, the landing page, ericemsberger.com for the Instagram, which we're starting to assemble a bunch of those two minute reels, just to speaking engagements before audiences, this podcast, or any, you know, times that I've been an instructor at our academy and other academies, natural. I can mesmerize, put people on the edge of their chair and engage them because I'm sincerely interested in getting helpful stuff out there. The 2 minute reels, I've had to work at that. Those are a little harder than you would think to be able to do a very concise message, an engaging message. How do you get people to engage your social media? You know, you got to loop these people in 0 to 5 seconds to get them to want to watch the rest of it. So the team has been working with me, getting those right. I've got a bunch of them out now, you know.
Everybody come and check them. I've seen them now. I've started following you on Instagram, and I see those coming out on a daily basis. So, are you going to write a book? Because you got such stories that would be unbelievable chapters.
Book in the works. Yes, I've actually, you know, the first step in any adventure is the first step. So creating a listing. My team has started making a database of incidents, stories like we've discussed today. And so we're coming up with just the right format that would be of interest, not just to law enforcement, but anybody that really wants a peek behind the curtain of ATF. Like everybody hears about the train wrecks of, you know, things that have gone off the rails with ATF, right? And, you know, fringe positions on firearms. I always like to be able to tell, hey, let me describe the ATF I worked for, the ATF task forces that I was so fortunate enough to be the leader of and work with incredible, talented investigators. That's the ATF I want everybody to see. Like, absent your book and the narco series, like, who would know outside of your team the effort that went into taking down Pablo Escobar, you know? So I think there's almost a duty, and there's no shortage of Billy Queen under and alone. Dobbins has come out, Lou Velozzi, his book, Storefronts thing. I mean, phenomenal. Pete Furcelli, The Deadly Path. He was the whistleblower before Congress on Fast and Furious. He's NYPD homicide guy, comes in the ATF, was in my group as a new agent in Brooklyn. And he went high. He went up to deputy assistant director. But when he was in his first boss job out in Phoenix and he found out what was going on, he's like trying to find out, like, what the hell's going on? Yeah. We're doing what? He said, no. We're not letting guns knowingly be straw purchased and trafficked to Mexico. Like, the Good Idea Fairy had come into the room. We're gonna get the cartels by being able to figure out where these guns go. Like, yeah, how are you gonna do that? Well, the wreckage of what that case did, not to mention one of those guns killed Brian Terry, Border Patrol agent. But there is a line of Mexican cops that have been killed by these firearms in Mexico, not to mention civilians that have been killed. And where are these guns? Who knows? The only time we find out is when they come up at crime scenes and the Mexican government traces them through the people in ATF that they're working with. But Pete saw what was going on and he's like, hey, time out, tough guy. That's not the way you should be doing business at all. You know, interdict firearms. We don't let them walk.
Right. You probably don't know this, but I actually had the honor of writing the foreword for Pete's book. So it's
I've read it.
Well, yeah. I appreciate it. It's it was an honor. It was an honor.
America needs to know that there behind the curtains that you will never hear, you will never see, you'll never even know, but it's happened. It's much like the military. The military's been at war since 9/11, and you could make the argument way before that with terrorism.
Right.
But where's America been? Yeah, the military's at war. America's at the mall.
Yeah.
Like the whole undercurrent of the World War II mentality where everybody in the United States was behind the effort, behind the military, everything. It's just not that way. Unfortunately, the people that are affected by war, the veterans, their families, their friends, they're affected. But seemingly, if you go anywhere else in society, you'll never hear anybody talking about raging battles going on in multiple continents. Yeah, it's sad. But America should sleep well knowing that there's good people in police departments, the federal agencies, and if it was not for us, it would be anarchy, mayhem, and lawlessness everywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I want that story, as many others have put it out there. I'm not reinventing the wheel or inventing the wheel, but I almost feel duty bound. I want the public to know the work that real ATF agents do, the mega violent shooters, trigger pullers, firearms traffickers, pattern arm robbery crews, the murder for hires, explosive incidents, people using explosives to kill people and mayhem. Yeah, ATF, we're right in the middle of all of that. That's who looks at that stuff. And that's why you get to go to the mall and be safe.
That's exactly
people like
right.
us, that's, all of us.
That's a great way to put it. The heroes out there, the men and women that are willing to put a uniform on and a bulletproof vest to protect us.
Yeah.
Can't say enough good things about them, and that's why the game of crimes exists.
Not for the faint of heart.
Absolutely not. Brother, it has been more than a pleasure to have you on here. Thank you so much for giving us a full 3 hours plus. I know you have
the pleasure
business.
Was mine.
Well, you have businesses and you have other things to take care of. You're proud of your son for joining the military. God bless him and protect him.
Yep. He's out there crushing it. And I couldn't be more proud. Proud dad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So everybody, thank you guys again for coming back this week to enjoy. I hope you found this as exciting as I did, because I mentioned to you, our pre-call was about 90 minutes and that's usually about a 15-minute call. Just because there's so many more stories. I can't wait for your book to come out. It's going to be fantastic. I just truly believe that. But none of this is possible without you listeners coming back every week. If you're listening to this and you haven't signed up on YouTube yet, do me a favor, go over to YouTube. In the search bar, type in Game of Crimes Podcast. Hit that subscribe button. Listen to some of the episodes. Put a face to the name of the people you've been listening to on your audio. Hit that like button on there. Send me your comments. If you'd like a little bit more content, check out gameofcrimes.com at our website and also patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I've got some new surprises getting ready to come on over there starting September 1st. So if you're curious about that, come on over. And in the meantime, let's see if we can figure out why you come back every week. I know why you come back, because you enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all, and that's the game of crimes. God bless. Eric, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you, sir.
See y'all next week.